Let God be God. Let God be God. As I was spending time with these readings, I was struck by this thin thread of that line, let God be God, which seems to run through each and every one of these readings. It really seems like a simple thing to say, let God be God. But at times, maybe we say or assume too much about God. We are told in other passages to just be still. Or called to notice God in silence. In this season of Lent, where we need to cut back on the stuff that distracts us from God, it is timely to stop and consider that we need to let God be God. This season is about turning towards God. And as we turn, we see at the center is Christ, who has stayed right there. Even as we have turned away from the crucified one in so very many ways. But perhaps a fairly encompassing way that we have turned away is claiming ourselves as God, or perceiving so many other things as more important. And they are countless. While it's also important to say that changing our habits or deciding to be better is certainly a part of this season, how can we not think of those New Year's resolutions that perhaps we've already forgotten? Has no impact, none of that, has any impact on God's constant desire to be in relationship with us, regardless of how often we turn and turn and turn away. And so in this time, whether we take up spiritual practices or in other ways that we might be able to turn and see Christ, who again has never moved away from us, I think it is this invaluable lesson for us to remember that we are to let God be God and to live into the fullness of God's love for us. So let God be God. These stories reveal to us God's reliability and constancy. In Genesis, this exchange between Abram and God hinges upon Abram's nervousness, surrounding the fact that most of what they agreed to has yet to come true. Abram does next to nothing, and in fact isn't even present during the final moments of this section where the covenant is revealed and realized. It comes through this language and ritual that, as modern listeners, is weird and a bit tricky. The smoking fire pot and flaming torch is symbolizing God. And as a side note, the smoking fire pot is probably better translated as oven, but nevertheless, this movement of God is compared to a passage in Jeremiah, which is depicted very similarly, where the same movement of God through a halved calf is a curse. And so these things together suggest that God is putting in place a self-restriction so that God remains true to the promise. As we might imagine, God is not entirely free, and yet God chooses to be utterly, completely reliable. Not by any merit or action of Abram, but by God's own greatest desire to to love. So let God be God. In the psalm, we have this wonderfully typical structure for the way in which we are instructed to communicate with God. Step one, this relationship, O God, we might say, is built on my trust of you because you have done such great things. Step two, we plead for God to be active and present in life. God, come near me and stay near me, we might say. And step three, closing back where it began with a sense of trust and hopefully filled with peace that we may be accompanied by that God. But wait for God. Why wait? Because God is reliable and committed to us, even when we wander away. Let God be God. And finally, in the gospel reading, in one of the most memorable images that Jesus provides for himself, Christ desires to gather children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings. Warmth, safety, comfort, love, family. And yet we may not be willing to rest under those wings. Perhaps seeking to find all those things in other sources, or seeking to do it on our own without the need for others. And yet, even still, regardless, nevertheless, Jesus Christ longs to gather us together and show us the depth and breadth of love. And although we have the freedom and choice to walk away, at various points we just might, it is ultimately this trust and deep knowing that still nothing will get in the way of Christ's love for us. And so, let God be God.